It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed on the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
I am, well...
You're here.
Sort of living the dream today.
Yeah, which dream?
You know, when you have to be somewhere early and need to be on time, everything that can go wrong.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. This morning, my kids, trying to get them ready for school. Remember the, when we were kids, a cartoon with the big dust ball? And you had weapons flying out and different symbols to cover for four-letter words and things like that. That were my kids this morning. Ah. It was just, are you kidding me? We have to be out the door 5 minutes ago. I have to be here. I got to do this. Yeah, it was just one of those mornings.
Never works that way, John.
I couldn't even get brew my own coffee. I had to stop on the way and get coffee.
That's it. And this is a coffee guy, I got to tell you.
Anyway, how about you?
Well, I'm here, you know, limping along a little bit, but we have a guest in the studio this morning.
So I noticed that.
I want to welcome Michelle Laws. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Love to have you here. We've been talking about this since last fall, I think.
Yes.
And it was a good opportunity to bring you in. Spring, as we talk, might be the best time to bring you in. I'm not sure. So we'll have a little discussion about unexpected events that happen to many people. Fortunately, not us at this point. I don't know. How many years you going on, John, being married, that is?
I should know that. I know it's...
This is not a test, John.
Yeah. We are going on 14, 15?
Okay, Amy, don't listen to the show.
let's see. We were married in 2002.
Oh, so now we're 14. In trouble.
Let's do the math.
14.
14 years. Yeah, well, yeah, just a spring chicken. We're doing 42 years this year, so...
She's put up with you for 40
years. I know. She hasn't figured it out yet, but that's okay.
We won't
tell her. We won't tell her. No.
Huh.
No. Probably should, but no.
Okay.
So what's in the market today?
Today in the market, we are talking about fake news.
There is no fake news, John, right? It's just everything.
Well, any more news is just fake news.
Everything in print, everything on the internet. It's all true.
I'm working on the really big fake news that hit. Actually affected a story that we reported last show.
Yeah, if you remember, I said I didn't believe it.
And I said I found it hard to believe as well.
Okay.
So I got to get some more notes on that one before we talk about that. But another story that we kind of alluded to, we talked about millennials and how good of savers they are. And I have a couple articles here that talk about they're not saving enough. And why do you think they're not saving enough? What are millennials strapped with that
student debt?
Probably, you read this article.
I didn't read the article.
You looked over and.
But I was talking to a millennial yesterday who was referred to me from another longtime client. She lives in Washington, D.C.
Ouch.
No low rent there. And she works for a nonprofit, travels the world. So she's having a good time. She was in Malawi last week. Working for a nonprofit.
Where is Malawi?
And Africa. And she sent me a copy of her student loan. She's paid off one, and she still has two student loans to the tune of probably $50,000. And the question was, how should I pay them off? Should I, you know, save more? Should I pay them off? What should I do? So, yeah, student loans is a big, big, big problem today. So, sorry, go ahead.
You're too smart.
Yeah, well.
Because that is the biggest issue. And they have some skewed thinking.
Surprise, surprise. Millennials think that they will earn six figures by age 30.
She is.
You're killing my story.
I'm trying, John. I'm trying.
And they expect that they're going to work until age 90.
No, she doesn't want to work that long.
Yeah, so there's two articles. One talks about exactly what you had just mentioned, the burden of student debt. So they're not saving enough because they are really kind of the first generation coming out with just hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes of mm-hmm. debt. And then they're going into an entry-level job position. And it is it's killing them, basically. So, like, I looked at my alma mater, and I couldn't afford to go there.
That was Temple University.
Thank you. Temple. Go Owls.
There you go.
Temple University is big in the Midwest, I know.
Who?
It's in Philadelphia, for those of you that...
Who's
Michelle's Temple? Looking at me going, where's Temple?
Yeah.
Never heard of Temple.
Temple who?
Never heard of Temple?
Never heard of Temple.
I'm hurting. But anyway, Temple University is in Philadelphia, where I grew up. But yeah, I couldn't afford to go there now. So that is in the news.
In the news. That's an issue. How about you, Michelle? You in that six-figure bracket by age 30?
Not by age 30. Wait, no, I'm not even 30 yet. I'm younger than that.
Oh, well.
That's why.
We're not going to go there, okay? But yeah, that's a big issue. And anyone who is in a millennial group has got to take a hard look at a plan. Imagine that, John, going back how many shows talking about planning?
Oh, we mention it every show. We're pretty consistent.
Every show, you know, have a plan, put it in writing, have specific time frames, specific objectives, implement the plan, and for gosh sakes, review it, adjust it, you know, make adjustments along the way. So if you do that, you might actually get there.
So our listeners, welcome to the Financial Cafe, where we blend good coffee with common sense financial information. And March is the month of what happens when the unexpected happens. And we have jumped right into one of the more unexpected topics, divorce and Michelle Laws. I will let Larry handle the introductions there because I just met her. But she is a divorce attorney.
No, she's not attorney.
Not attorney. I like Larry take over. This
maybe
is where you jump
that.
In, you take over.
Pardon me this morning. I don't know. I've known Michelle for a number of years, and she works with divorcees in terms of educating them to help understand what they're faced with. For many individuals, whether it's the man or the woman, they're in unfamiliar territory, hopefully. And they don't know what
Johnny Carson.
Yeah, unless you're Johnny Carson. Or I was just going to say something, but I won't. unless they have been there before, as to how it will impact their retirement, how it will impact paying their educational student loans, how it will impact their children if they have children. So there's a lot of key areas that fall under that regard. So it's as unexpected and maybe even more so than the hailstorm we had the other day.
That was unexpected for February 28th, wasn't it?
Very unexpected in February because I know it was a small swath that went through, but Christy, my daughter, who is the insurance agent I've talked about before, pretty much destroyed her siding and her screens on her windows, and she just got home about 5 minutes before it hit and saved her relatively new car, so that was good. But a lot of damage, and I told her, well, that's why you're in the business, so... So welcome, Michelle. Glad to have you here today. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. You're in the right place at the right time. So why did you get into this business?
Well, back about 10 years ago, I went through a very complex divorce myself. And I have both a business and financial background, and I experienced a lot of financial pitfalls, things that I didn't know, things that now looking back shouldn't have happened. After that time frame, I was very led to start a business to be able to help individuals that don't understand financials at all and that really need some direction during a very overwhelming time.
It's not uncommon. We find working with families, particularly if a husband and or wife, significant other, as it were today, got to be politically somewhat correct, I suppose, comes in one person or the other usually is not involved in finance at all.
Correct.
So the survivor, and in some cases when we deal with someone who has passed away, the survivor often knows nothing about their finances, which again, if they have a good plan, that would not happen. So you've got either the husband or the wife, or in your case, I guess the wife in most cases. What are some of the questions that they have for you when they find themselves in this unfortunate situation?
It depends on if I'm talking to the male or the female, but you're right. It is typically the female that's coming in to see me, the wife. Her first question is, how am I going to live? Where's my money going to come from? Can I keep the house? I even had someone ask me, am I going to be living on the street? So it's a very fearful time for the wife, especially if they've been a stay-at-home mom or the wage earner that earns a lot less than their husband. It's an extremely terrifying time, and they want to make sure their kids are okay, and they really want to stay in the house, and sometimes that's not what's best. So my job is to be able to analyze those numbers to be able to see, can they really do that? And of course, it's all under the direction of their attorney. I'm on the team with the attorney. I'm not an attorney.
Good to know.
Yes.
She plays one on TV, though.
That's right. Yeah. That's the late night show.
It would have been good to know about, what, 5 minutes ago?
Well, I work very closely with all the attorneys because it's really the attorney that's directing how much per month that they really could be able to receive, looking at the assets to divide. That's not something that's my call, but I'm able to look at the scenarios to see, does it work for really both parties? We don't want to leave the other person devastated either.
What comes to mind is something that we preach on this show, that any investment decision based on emotion is almost always the wrong decision. And you're talking about a situation where emotions are flying high. We had a situation in our office where my office is right next to the conference room, and it was loud in there one time to where I had to turn on the radio because emotions were flying, shall we say. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can only imagine your situation because you have emotions and you're trying to be logical, and that's just not a fun spot to be in.
And that's actually the reality I help a lot of clients see, in addition with just analyzing the numbers, is I do educate them and help them take some of the emotion out of the decision. Because it's easy to say, I'm done, I'll just take this and move on. But that's not what's best, because what you're agreeing to and signing to now will affect the rest of their lives. So it's not just the short term, it's the long term. And I really help them see making an emotional decision in the short term will actually hurt them more in the long run.
Oh, absolutely. So what are some of the more common mistakes that you help rectify that people come in and make, besides the fact I just want to be done with this and I'll take the loss and make it up later? What are some of the more common mistakes that you see people make?
Well, it depends on at what point they're coming to see me. If they're coming to see me in the very beginning, I can alleviate a lot, starting with making sure they get copies of all their financial documents. Because I don't need to tell you, once the divorce is filed, things tend to disappear. So I make sure they make copies of all their tax returns, the attachments, bank statements, investment statements, basically whatever they can get their hands on to be able to help them later. So that's the first thing I correct, is get copies of documents, because it gets really expensive later on. Another is every court that we have is going to want an individual to put together something called a financial statement. This statement will show what their income will be, where it's coming from, and what they feel their future expenses will be. A lot of people will just guess and put down a number. And this is how the court decides how much money someone needs. So if that's wrong, it's wrong forever. Wow. So I will actually...
There's no going back to...
You got it. No going back. This is a one-time shot. So I will sit down with them and really help them see what their future expenses can be, anything from a mortgage to taxes, future expenses for the kids, extracurricular activities, things that are really going to be costly that they may not have the insight to see what it would be.
Okay, wow.
So this really speaks to the fact that we tell everyone out there, whether they're 20 years old or 60 years old, that they need to have information about their financial situation. They need to be comfortable with what's going on, because finding themselves in the situation you're describing, where they have no knowledge over their assets, over their income, over their debts, the costs, can truly be devastating. Somebody who thought they were, and I don't propose that that's a good thing, they were being taken care of, so to speak, for the rest of their lives, And all of a sudden that comes crashing down, and they really don't have any information relating to that. Because as you've mentioned, it's not unusual for things to disappear and people to go, but I thought we had, well, and I, you know, I don't know where it went. It's just gone. But so having a good financial plan throughout life is a good place for them to start, because if they can walk into you and say, here's my plan, here's what we have, the assets, it makes your job, I would think, simpler in terms of helping them to realize what they're going to need to survive, basically.
Right. And knowledge is really power. You mentioned as far as things disappearing. I do notice that the spouse that have no idea about the financial history, those are the cases that I find there's hidden income or hidden assets. So when I get into analyzing numbers or reviewing any of the documents that they have, there's stuff that clients didn't even know about. I even had a case where there was a gentleman that actually was funneling a third of his income to a whole new account, had a car, and the wife had no idea this was going on. He was paying for bills and a girlfriend out of this account. So once we got investigating, it was one check that led to this account.
Wow.
So the tax return was showing filed income of X, and he was telling her that the income is really Y. And of course, simple subtraction would tell you there's something missing there.
Right. And she believed him because, like you just said, she was taken care of. All the bills were paid. Everything was fine. And it didn't really come up until I started doing forensics within the documents and realizing that things weren't adding up, literally, and had to start tracing and looking for it. And that's where a lot of attorneys will bring me in. If there's a case that they suspect there's hidden assets or income, I'll go through and do all the forensics for them.
So typically, is it the attorney who calls on you, or is it the individual who hires you in this capacity?
It depends on the case. Most of the time, everyone comes in on a referral basis, and they'll see me individually, and they'll retain me directly, and then I'll work with their attorney. But I've also had cases where the attorney will hire me directly for basic needs. So if someone has, let's say, a 401k that they've been contributing to for 10 years, but they've only been married for two of those 10, I need to do a calculation for the attorney, because non-marital and marital assets are treated differently. And it's not just a simple subtraction. You need to run real calculations based on what the market has done. So in that case, an attorney would hire me to do different scopes of work.
So are there not attorneys who do the type of work that you do?
No, not at all. Now, attorneys, some of them can be very good at finances, but their specialty is the law.
Where?
I know I know three, actually.
All right. Okay. All right, John.
But the majority of them, no, they don't know numbers. I actually had an attorney tell me once they went to law school because she never wanted to do numbers again. I mean, that was, she was done. So that being said, attorneys don't do this type of work. They might be able to help construct the financial statement that the courts need, but they're not going to be able to do forensics and tracings and analyze and project numbers of how much someone needs, things like that. That's not their job. Their job is to present the law and to be able to help their client to the best of their ability.
And I will speak to that, because I have had, during the course of my career, some situations where a client has called and said, you know, this is what's going on. And I talked to my attorney, and my attorney said to complete a financial statement, to present documents showing the assets and the expenses and whatnot. And so the attorney actually sent them back to us, because we were their financial planner, to try and help put that together. So I could see there is a significant need in developing that type of forensic accounting information. So what type of training have you gotten that makes you specifically qualified in this capacity?
Well, besides the background of finance and business, I actually have three specialized certifications. One's called a CDFA. It's a Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Another is a CFDS, which is a Certified Divorce Financial Specialist. And then an MAFF, which is a Master Analyst of Financial Forensics. So it allows me to be able to look at
Don't
divorce.
Don't mess with her.
No. lots of alphabet soup behind that name. But no, it really allows me to work in a different capacity than attorneys would, because that's where my focus is at. So I'm able to really help the client and empower them more.
So what differentiates what you do from, say, what we do as financial planners or CPAs or accountants?
A couple differentiations. There's a lot of very good financial experts out there. You two being two of them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She's very smart.
Yes.
I know. She is.
But both of you are very specialized in what you do. So financial planning, as you know, you're talking to your clients and you're discussing what goals that they have, and then you're going to implement solutions to get them that goals, whether they're married or divorced, single, whatever the case might be. An accountant, they're going to look at something at a static moment in time, and they're going to be able to talk about tax impact and ways to save on taxes. That's their particular scope. They might do a calculation of, you know, what the tax impact of spousal support would be or what would happen dividing certain assets. I'm actually the blend of those two, as well as different expertise in the divorce arena that neither one would have.
Wow. That's good. I'm trying to imagine doing what we do, which is difficult sometimes to gather information from people. And we are in a friendly environment. I can't imagine trying to gather information from people where it's an acrimonious environment. And yeah, that's just, I can't.
What presents some interesting challenges? to say the least, yeah.
Well, I've been able to mediate for a couple of couples, and believe it or not, there are some times where a couple can actually talk things through, doesn't happen very often, but be able to talk things through and figure out, how do we divide this? We know we're getting divorced. What's the best way to do it? And you're right. Those voices have been raised to the point where I've had to ask them of, hey, you know, we need to settle down. Do we need to take a break? Because those emotions do get really high, and it's pretty hard to do.
So have you ever had a conscious uncoupling? Who was that famous actress that Gwyneth Paltrow?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
the conscious uncoupling. So do you see people underestimating future expenses? Like one of the topics I have four kids, and childcare would have to come to the top of the list. Obviously in the short term, you probably get family and stuff to help out, but in the long term, that's not going to be there. How do you, because I'm sure the spouse who ends up paying is going to say, well, no, you got so-and-so, so I don't have to pay for that. And they're like, well, it's not going to be there forever. How do you,
well,
you pull that together to say this has this value?
It is underestimated all the time. And actually, when I run analytics, I look at it in the short term.
I'm not thinking about a divorce. It was an analogy.
You didn't know your anniversary. Your wife might already be thinking about it.
Oh, possibly.
But
don't call her.
But you have four kids, so.
She scares me.
Yeah.
I can help you. But no, when I look at the analytics, I actually look at the expenses in the long term. But there is a certain point where when an expense drops off, I drop it off as well, because I want it to be as true as we can look. There's always so many variables in the future we don't know. But if we know some, we use them. And you mentioned as far as, you know, how things are underestimated. I do find that the men who have come to me, the husbands that have come to me, they're clueless, because the wife typically handled all the childcare expenses that they're now going to have. And a lot of the times, and this is just true in a lot of the court systems, the husband usually makes more of the money, more of the income. So he's asked to pay more. Sometimes he truly can't afford to pay what they're asking. So part of my job is to help him determine what your real expenses you're going to have and what do you have left at the end of the day for support payments, whether it's child or spousal support. So I need to make sure those that are underestimated, he truly takes into account of those expenses, and the wife as well.
Do you find that the situations where there are no children involved are much simpler than the ones obviously where there are?
Not when there's money involved, because divorce is two things, money and kids.
Money makes people do funny things, Larry.
It does.
And they go crazy.
I'll have some of the same arguments with or without kids. And a lot of my clients do tend to divorce, and this isn't true across the board, but most of my clients have been at the point of their kids are approaching college age. So there's not a big argument other than who's going to pay for college expenses, or maybe they're in high school. You know, they're still looking at that expense. But otherwise, we're not looking at a lot of the younger kids.
So where does life insurance come into play in this situation?
One of the things that I suggest is being on the team for the divorce is if someone's getting a stream of support, if the person who's paying the support dies, where's that money going to come from? So one of the things I advise to have implemented is life insurance on the person paying it. So what you need to do is run a calculation again of what that stream of support is worth today, and you buy a policy for that amount. So it's extremely important to have that in place.
And that's not unusual, again, that we have those types of situations. And of course, you have to then determine, is it an income need that is going to end at some point based on college or based on kids or whatever? And in that case, maybe a term policy would be sufficient. Or is it something that's going to run out for a much longer period of time where you really need to look at, you know, potentially whole life or even, I hate to say it, universal or variable with some guarantees so that you know that it's going to run until and or including retirement potentially for either individual in that particular situation. So,
correct. I've actually worked with someone's financial advisor to be able to help run those numbers because that's something that needs to be in that financial statement I talked about earlier to account for how much money someone needs. So what we do is we look and see if the support's going to be paid for 10 years, we look at a 10-year term. If it's someone that, let's say, in the later years is already receiving a pension, but if that payer passes away, the pension's gone.
Stops.
That is where the life insurance that has some guarantees that lasts a longer period of time comes into play. So I lean on the financial advisor to run those hypothetical numbers for me so I can put them in my analysis.
So how many meetings, if someone is referred to you by their attorney or comes to you of their own volition, how'd you like that, John?
I gotta look that one up.
Yeah, look that one up. I'll give you a minute. How many meetings does, obviously, the case can go on forever, literally. I had one client. She's still alive, fortunately. Her husband is not. But her divorce went out over 18 years.
Wow, that beats mine. I was 5. I thought mine was long.
18 years. And she was a very well-paid
Is there anything left to divide?
Financial. Well, she was a very well-paid financial individual. I won't reveal any more than that with one of the major corporations in St. Louis and had some significant income. He owned a property and casualty agency. So there was significant income and assets. And every time she wanted to settle it and just get on with life, as it were, and her ex did not. So every court, it was extended and postponed and whatnot. It went on for 18 years, and he finally died. So I took care of that, but the divorce was ended. I can't shake my head.
Wow. Stall tactics. I see that all the time. I mean, that's one of the things in divorce that, and the whole purpose of that is to either run the other person out of money so that they can't.
They give up.
Right. They say the game's over. And that's where the emotional decision comes in of, we keep going back. I'm spending all this money. I'm just done. They can have whatever they want.
Well, and it really, don't get me started on the court system. Please don't. But really today, the courts, I don't think, personal opinion, support either individual to the extent that they should, because you're in a situation, as you indicated, that someone who may be wronged, if you will, from a number of different aspects, does not have the resources, the time, or the money to fight their case. And they're in a situation with the courts, the postponements, the delays. The attorneys, we have one coming in on the next show.
That's what it was.
The attorneys are the only ones who benefit in that situation. I mean, truly, because the bills come in regularly. I see it with clients that every month, you know, there's a bill there and, you know, quarter hours, you know, $80 or $100. You know, a lot of the attorneys are charging upwards of $200 an hour.
At least.
$200 to $300. And just a postponement can cost the individual $500. Well, if you don't have a lot of money, it really is a disservice, because how do you pay that? I mean, you can't. You're banking on a future settlement that may or may not happen for years to come down the road. So,
and that's actually a benefit I can serve a lot of clients with, as I help save them both time and money. Because in the beginning, everyone's just trying to scramble and see what kind of assets do we have, where are they, and what's the debts. I'm going to be able to streamline that process because of what I know and what my background would be. An attorney is going to have to do a little bit more work, and they're more expensive than I am.
makes a big difference. It's maximizing the benefit of getting them the information they need to serve their client without having to spend a significant fortune to get to that point.
Exactly, because I'm a complement to their attorney. I'm not in competition by any means.
So who do you actually work for? Do you work for the attorney or do you work for the individual?
It depends on what the need would be. Kind of like I mentioned earlier, an attorney will call me pretty often and just ask some generic questions, ask me to value certain things, and I can do that work for them. The client, if they need to, they can also ask me to do certain things to take back to their attorney. Most of the time, unless there's a case with some very sensitive information, the client will actually retain me, and then I will be what's called an expert witness and fully disclosable, where any conversations that go on, any emails, any documents, that's fully discoverable. If the attorney retains me, I retain a attorney-client privilege. So again, it goes back to what are the needs of the case? What's the scope? There have been times where clients have come in and we've talked over some sensitive information, and I've actually advised your attorney should retain me based on the information you're telling me.
You mean about that other business I've got?
Exactly. The other business or that money that's sitting over here that nobody knows about, things like that.
In the Cayman account? Is that the one you're talking
that's
about?
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you must have been in on that meeting.
We don't know anything about that. Never heard of it.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's the truth.
So you've got to have some good stories. There have got to be just some wacky stuff that you've seen. What comes to the top
share.
Of your mind as far as?
I'm trying to think of probably the best story I can hear of. And again, it's...
Names have been changed to protect the innocent.
The dog is getting all the money, the cat. I mean...
I haven't had any ones where the cat's gotten all the money.
Yeah, that's true.
But
dogs get it.
Right. But I've had some pretty crazy case. And again, I love all my clients, and I do help them untangle and look at some things. But I actually had a case where this one comes to the top of the mind, where he had a girlfriend, and I don't need to tell you that happens a lot, or a boyfriend. I don't want to just leave the husbands in there. Sometimes there's a girlfriend and a boyfriend.
Sometimes both. I mean, you know, we've got to be fair.
Well, this particular husband had three different girlfriends.
Talk about stupid people.
The wife was clueless, and the one husband was actually funding the first girlfriend's apartment and house and put down payment while he was living in another apartment to meet the other two girlfriends.
I think I saw that episode on TV.
It is one of those stories that you really have to wrap your mind around. But
how
then
do you keep track of it all?
I know. I have one husband, and he's hard to keep track of sometimes, you know? I don't know how they do it with four.
Holy mackerel.
But, you know, at the end of the day, you really look and see he wasted a lot of the marital money on three different girlfriends. And in the state of Illinois, that's not something that's looked at very nicely. Mm. So it wasn't very favorable for him in the end. And half of that money came back to her because he wasted it. So that's probably the one that comes to the top, because it was almost unbelievable. It would have been something that was written in a movie. So that one comes to mind first. And there's other ones that are similar to that. I never put anything past anyone.
No, I mean, experience gives you that jaded look on things, that's for sure.
It does.
You become very skeptical.
And, of course, for my client, it becomes very hurtful. And that's where some of the emotion comes in, of either an anger or a sadness. And it's, you know, as much as those stories, you know, we kind of laugh about it, what they are. But for the client that it's experiencing, you know, the husband or wife, it's a really devastating moment to find out that had went on and the marital money was wasted over there. And just some of the emotion that's tied with that, it's sad.
Do you ever find yourself telling a client, you know, obviously it is a very emotional time. There's all kinds of hurt that goes along with that, and somewhat surprised at how things got to where they were. But do you ever just tell them, let's pretend for a moment that you're looking at the first day of the rest of your life. What is that going to look like? You know, what does that need to look like for you? Because the assets may be gone. There, you know, may not be a lot of income. You know, maybe the guy or girl, whoever, disappears. I mean, that happens too. Sometimes they're just gone. You can't find them.
Right.
And now what do you do? Which speaks to a certain extent to having a good record of all of the investments and how they're held, whether it's, you know, joint tenants with right of survivorship, or whether it's held in a TOD account. So they have access to, you know, the assets. Because if that person's gone and they don't have a power of attorney, a durable power, they cannot access them without going to court.
No.
So it's the, but do you ever just say, okay, let's pretend for a minute we're starting the rest of our lives. Now, where do we go from here? What does that picture look like?
I haven't initially. Usually when I'm talking with someone, they're so raw with the emotion that could be going on depending on the circumstances. But as the proceedings are coming to a close or as the settlement's getting closer, I do have them somewhat picture it's time to remember that you are dividing your household. Of what you knew as a financial togetherness is now separate. And there are some things that you need to do to take care of yourself or take care of yourself and your children that are extremely important. Because this is your financial life now. It's the reality of where they are.
Let's talk about retirement plans. You know, you and I worked together many, many years ago as in the financial industry. And one of the things we run into, and I just have to kind of shake my head, are attorneys dealing with retirement plan assets. My experience has been about one or two out of 10 attorneys actually knows how to write a quadro. For those of you who are not familiar, it's a qualified domestic relations order, which is required after the divorce is finalized to separate assets in accordance with the divorce. I've got one now, and it's actually in Texas. We have a retirement plan down there, and the divorce was finalized, and they sent us a copy of the divorce papers. And they wanted us to divide the retirement assets. And of course, I attempted to contact the attorney after four phone calls that were not returned, contacted the employer and indicated to them that the employee needs to contact the attorney and tell them to write a properly executed quadro or they're not going to get their money. And that was around Christmas. This is March. Still haven't heard anything. But it's very common, even when we do get a quadro, that it's wrong. We go back to the federal law, which defines what has to be contained within a quadro. And in fact, many cases end up writing it for them. We're not attorneys. We don't give legal advice, but we have the list the DOL has put out, says what has to be in a quadro. And why is it they can't write a properly executed quadro?
That's a very good question. I think you need to ask the attorney that's coming in after me. But I would say...
Segue. Yeah. Good answer.
Yeah, I would say your ratio is right, about 2 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Some of them do try to get the sample language from whoever the administrator might be, but then they leave out the important things like death benefit. Because what happens in the scenario you just said, and the other person passes away in 3 months, and then it's left to who? I mean, that's a real issue. Mm-hmm. So why can't they prepare? That's a good question. But that's where I always ask the client to go back to their financial advisor and properly involve them to make sure that it executes correctly. Because that is something that if certain details aren't in there, it won't execute.
Well, and even, and I just have to laugh because it's funny. Michelle, my administrator, who's been with me for years and years, we read these things and it's just like, okay, they get half of the retirement plan. As of when? What amount? What about, you know, the divorce was finalized 6 months ago? What about the earnings mm-hmm. or loss
or losses
since that point? Who does it go to? I mean, you assume it goes to the other party in the divorce, but it's not specified for whose benefit it is. We can't do anything with it without complete information, Social Security numbers, you know, addresses, names, dates of birth, et cetera, et cetera. And in the case of this plan in Texas, one of the parties involved is, I don't know for a fact, but I suspect an illegal immigrant. And they've pretty much disappeared. So it's, you know, the money sitting there and it's continuing to grow as it was invested by the employee, but we cannot get it to the divorcee because, again, the attorney won't process it. So it's just sad that things are left so much up in the air, and I'm sure she needs that money, but there's no way to obtain it. So, and it's the same thing with a pension plan. You know, if they're eligible to receive a defined benefit pension plan, for life? Do they get, you know, 100% of the benefit? Is it 75%? Is it 50%? Is it for life? Is it a period certain so that it only lasts for 10 or 20 years? You know, all of the different things that we have to deal with as financial planners in issuing those types of payments. So,
and you mentioned the need for money, and you asked earlier about some mistakes. Here's a mistake that comes to mind as if someone needs money right away, let's say to even pay their attorney or down payment for a house, you will see an attorney write the quadro. It'll roll to an IRA, and then the client distributes the money they need. If they do it properly, because again, that's a mistake, if you do it properly, you know, the client can avoid the 10% penalty and just have to pay the tax. So there's a big mistake that attorneys make, not realizing that provision's out there.
Yeah, if they don't roll it over properly, then you're going to have the 20% mandatory withholding from a qualified plan. They could then put it in an IRA, but they have to make up the 20%, which they don't have at that point. And there are some provisions, you know, not under necessarily an IRA, where they could leave it in the plan, potentially, depending on the adoption agreement, and have other access to it, potentially a loan. You know, they could take a loan on it if it's put into their account, even though they're not an employee, and the plan allows for loans for non-employees. So there's a lot of nuances that someone who's not familiar with qualified plan administration would not be familiar with what those options are. So, you know, in our role as such, we can assist you and indirectly the client in determining what is the best, most cost-effective, really, method of accessing those funds.
Right, and that's something I always investigate for the client, because I do feel like different provisions are left on the table that they're unaware of, only because the attorney either hasn't had the opportunity or the time to call and check on that, and the client hasn't thought about it because you don't know what you don't know.
Well, and again, not to disparage, there's another one, John.
I got that one.
You got that one? Okay.
What was the other one?
I forget.
Started with a V.
Yeah, it's a V. Volition.
Volition.
Yeah.
Word of the day.
Many
new segment.
Of the new segment, word of the day. There you go. Put that in there. Can you get a sponsor for it?
I'm trying.
Okay. One of the things I've run into personally, I know professionally a number of the divorce attorneys in the local area. And in my experience, having had some clients work with a number of them also, unfortunately, is that they have so many cases going at one time that they don't either have the time, and in some cases, the client doesn't want to spend the money to have them really dig in to look at all of those ramifications of how the distributions and things should be done. So takes us back to my next question, which happens to be, what are the major things that your clients do that really hinders your ability to help them settle the case? You know, what are some of the dumb things that they do that cost them money and you time, and they really should have asked somebody first?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is when I do sit with them to talk about expenses and assets, I need full disclosure from them. And sometimes I'll have the client that holds their cards close, and I have to have the hard discussion of, I'm here to help you. You need to tell me everything.
And you're not from the government.
Right. I'm not from the government. I'm not an enrolled IRS agent. I'm not anything like that. We need to really just lay it all out on the table for everyone so we can really get to the bottom and get you moved on. So that's the first thing, that the dumb mistake that they make. I actually had someone withhold a couple of accounts that I found. And I shared with them, it retained me to help find what you thought your ex had, and I'm finding yours. You need to disclose those. So that's really the biggest thing, is tell me everything, because I'm going to find it probably anyway.
Yeah, well, you mean you want to know everything?
Money
everything.
Makes people do funny things.
Money makes people do crazy things.
Absolutely.
And it's not in divorce, but every time a family goes through, almost 100% of the time, we'll give it 80%, the close-knit family that once was, as soon as it comes to a death in the family, is not so close-knit anymore.
And it seems to increase.
Yeah.
Where did you come from?
Some of the things that, you get more relatives than you know what to do with.
And what so, about, do you see people forget to change their beneficiary designations after it's done?
All the time. And that's where actually, again, I go back to their financial advisor and say, you need to make a checklist of everything that you need to do. Part of it is changing beneficiaries, changing titles. There's so much to do once everything has been signed. Usually when everything's signed and over, that's when a client will take a deep breath and go, oh, good, it's all done. But there's so much more to do that a lot of that's left on the table. And I actually had a case, it wasn't mine, that someone shared with me that they actually didn't change the beneficiary, and a couple years later, it went to their ex.
Mm-hmm. I had a situation when I first got out of school. Wealthy gentleman got divorced, married the new 2.0 version, if you will, younger version, never changed.
I'd hold out for 3.0 at least.
Never changed the beneficiary form. And as advisors and your role as well, we can't do it for them.
No.
It's a legal binding document that they have to do. Never did it. He died, and the ex got the money, which I'm sure is not where he wanted it to go, and certainly not where his new wife wanted it to go. New version.
You and another mistake that I see, as we're talking, I think of other mistakes along the way, is – remember we mentioned the life insurance earlier for the support. Sometimes whoever is receiving the support, that's the person who should own the policy. Sometimes one of the biggest mistakes that they need to do, if let's say there's a policy out there and the person who's paying can't qualify for a new life insurance, you just change ownership. Sometimes that person doesn't change the ownership and then it lapses. And then what do? You can't reinstate it after a certain amount of time. And now they're
61
without
days.
You got it. And then they can't go back to court and say, hey, I want this life insurance because it's over and done. They forget to, dot the I's and cross the T's.
Hmm. Well, and you may well be aware of this, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. It only happened to us once as a third-party administrator where an individual got divorced, did not change the beneficiary of their retirement plan to the new wife. Died, and then had kids involved, and had hoped to pass on. It wasn't a huge sum. It was less than six figures, but nevertheless, it would have done a lot for the kids to his new wife for the benefit of his children. But it didn't happen, so it went to court, and I think it all got worked out. But under the new guidelines, the Pension Protection Act, the PPA, which required all plans to be restated last year onto the new document. And I attribute this to Congress. Someone probably got burnt by not changing their beneficiary because the legal language under the new document, the default language, is that if an individual gets a divorce, that immediately upon issuance of the divorce decree, the ex-spouse is no longer their beneficiary, period, legally. And it bypasses the ex and goes to either their new spouse or to the children, or then follows a hierarchy of other siblings, beneficiaries. So current law, it can no longer go to the ex-spouse because it's changed.
I can't imagine the mess that will create if they do remarry and the kids want the money, and then that argument. Again, you never want to hear from the government. We're here to help.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? So yeah, I think somebody got burnt and decided to change the law. Imagine that. They can go back, depending if someone actually does take the time to check the right boxes, they can go back and change it to the way it was before. But yeah, right now, as soon as they're divorced, that money goes to the new spouse or kids or whoever, which it probably should anyway. So that's just what happens.
You just got a whole lot of ex-spouses really angry, Larry.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But you're talking about beneficiaries. They should always be updated, regardless whether it's life insurance or it's an asset, use a TOD, a transfer on death, or some type of beneficiary arrangement, so that it does go to the appropriate folks who are involved. What is really a fair and equitable settlement? I mean, when you have two parties who may have spent, whether it's a year or 50 years together, What, you know, how do you determine what's fair when you divide assets and income and those types of things?
Does time matter?
Time does matter. So I'll answer both questions. We actually look and
see. It's a twofer.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to bifurcate at this one. So with the term
That's another good word.
That's right.
I got to start writing these
write
down.
Write these down, Jack.
I'm trying to think of all that I can so he can go Google them later.
Yeah, right.
So
he lives for that.
Right. So term of time does matter. As you both know, especially with Social Security, there's that trigger point of 10 years. So it is going to matter. On the fair and equitable side, that's going to be different for everyone. It depends on the assets, and it's going to depend on the income, the expenses. It's all going to have different scenarios. The one thing that I analyze is I'll use a certain amount of income, a certain amount of support paid, and a certain division, and then I'll actually project those numbers to see if it appears equitable, where both parties are growing about the same rate. Both from a net worth standpoint, both from a cash flow standpoint, I'm going to make sure that there's not a negative cash flow and that someone's not going to have to foreclose on their
if
house.
Only our
five
government
years.
Could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, good maybe luck. I need to have a conversation with them, huh?
Yeah, probably.
Go get them, girl.
That's right. But that is, again, one of the questions that I'm asked from the wife is, how about the house? Can I keep the house? Is it going to foreclose? And that's where I actually go ahead and forecast out to see, is it fair and equitable? Because if she's keeping in a liquid asset versus the husband keeping a bunch of cash, we need to really look forward and see what's the impact of that scenario. So even just changing a, you know, $1,000 a month going to her, that makes a pretty big impact on their net worth and cash flow. So you really just need to analyze the numbers. And it's all under the direction of their attorney.
Wow.
It's all about the numbers, John.
All the numbers.
Yep, that's why you got to have a plan. You have a plan, it solves a lot of problems.
So what, as we wrap up the show, it's hard to believe that we've already gone through 50 minutes of material here, but as we wrap up, what would be your advice to someone who is, I hate to say, contemplating, as we talked about before the show, this time of year, unfortunately, you get through the holidays, Valentine's Day, and I don't know if people have a...
I know accountants have a busy season, but I didn't realize divorce.
Yeah.
Divorce people, after the first
people,
of the year.
People decide they don't want to spend the next Christmas the way the last one went, and they're going to do something about it. So what's your advice to them?
Well, if someone's contemplating it, the first thing that I would suggest is what I mentioned earlier is get a copy of all your documents first. That way, at least you have them before you even approach your spouse. That's just my opinion. The next is have a strategy session with someone like myself to be able to talk about some of the impact. And let's find you a good family law attorney that's going to be able to work for you and on your side and also be able to share what the law states. And we'll be able to put those numbers together, and then you slowly approach the process.
You probably would not recommend for an individual who is previously not involved in any of the finances of the family to go to their significant other and go, honey, can I have copies of all the statements?
No, because I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. He or she is going to move all the family money into their own account, and that will force possibly that person to live off of credit cards just to buy groceries and things of the nature. It's a means of control, and you know, I'm in control of the finances all this time. I'm going to maintain control because it's a fear.
It's survival.
Mm-hmm.
It is survival, and it's not a fun topic at all, but a necessary one. Unfortunately, since the statistics are that what is a divorce rate now, probably close to 50%. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately,
I did read an article that it's coming down.
Is it?
The divorce rate's coming down.
Is that because people?
I don't know if that's fake news or not. But
is that because they're not getting married?
Maybe
part of it.
Maybe absolutely.
They're just not getting married anymore, so they don't have to get divorced.
Michelle, please share your contact information so if people that are listening are contemplating or would like to reach you, how do they reach you?
My office phone number is 618-624-5592. I always share with everyone best to reach me on my cell because I'm usually on the road quite a bit, which is 618-410-7634. If anyone just wants to look at things more from a generic standpoint or maybe look at some links, I do have a website that would be helpful for them to begin. Which is divdollars.com. So divdollars.com.
Divdollars.com.
And all my contact information will be there, along with, again, information on divorce and different questions that I'm often asked with some answers that I would respond with.
And it would be a situation you would offer a no-cost consultation, at least an initial visit.
Absolutely.
To kind of point them in the right direction if need
don't
be.
Don't you like how he jumps in and runs your business for you?
I do. That was great.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to do it for free.
Right. Well, I do that because I never know if I can add value to a case or not. Sometimes I can just give a couple of tips, or I can direct them to a good attorney, or even sometimes a counselor, different things. There's no reason to pay me for that. I really want to help the individual empower themselves and start a new beginning. And if I can help, I let them know. And if I can't, I share that with them as well.
Well, like with us, it has to be a good fit. We have to know that we're good for the client and the client's good for us. And if so, then it's a win-win situation for everybody. So
as we wrap up the topic.
What stories you got today, John?
Well, let's thank our sponsor for the topic of the week, the Chef Shop.
Scott and Nancy Schneider at the Chef Shop, of course, are underwriters for the show. It's where a good cup of coffee starts every day outright. And we like
Absolutely.
Our coffee, John.
I know.
They're located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025 in the Schnucks Plaza, right next to Target. And their phone number is 618-659-9840. I was in the store again, which I am regularly, recently, not only for coffee, but, of course, the fudge and the popcorn. Had some popcorn the other night. It's just really, yeah, good stuff. It might make your sessions go better if you gave them some popcorn when it came in, so let them chomp down on that.
That's true.
Just a thought, so you can do that.
Chocolate fudge. Chocolate makes everything better.
Yeah, chocolate does make everything better. But, we're happy that Scott and Nancy continue to support us. The show we had with an interview with Nancy a few weeks ago. We did get a call this week that some of our listeners have been going in and asking for a free T-shirt and or coffee cups. We are aware that they ran out of coffee mugs. Can you believe that?
So just hold on, folks. We will be supplying some new mugs here shortly, but these will be even better than the previous ones.
I understand these are hot and cold mugs.
These are the vacuum sealed. Fully logoed with the Financial Cafe logo as well as the radio station's logo. So you can stop in, say you heard about the Chef Shop on the radio show, and they will share a mug with you, but they're not there yet, so you're just going to have to wait. Or if you're interested in a T-shirt, or I think we have some other stuff in the goodie box.
We do.
For them.
Go back often. Go see them. You'll enjoy it. It's a great place to visit. So thanks to them. Thanks to WSIE, Steve Jankowski, and Daryl for supporting us in terms of our venue and keeping us on the air and sharing some tidbits of information about the financial situations as we continue with the unexpected month. We're going to have a new guest coming on to the next show.
Which is an attorney.
Pat Mathis is an attorney.
All right.
I've known Pat for probably going on 25 years. And expert, and I did get an unsolicited compliment this morning from someone whose family had worked with Pat, actually, and it was very, very happy with the outcome of their will and estate planning and whatnot. So he does a great job, and we'll be talking more in the next show. So time for our story.
You go first. I'm going to save this one because you're going to like this one. As you like to make fun of me on most shows. For my follically challenged position in life,
well,
shall we say.
This is one of those, again, as I scratch my head, a 12-year-old boy adamantly denied having stolen an iPhone when he was questioned by the police near his home. Then the iPhone rang in his closet. And as the police asked him what that was, he said, okay, yeah, all right, I stole the iPhone. He said, but as for the BlackBerry you're asking about, I didn't steal that one. And then it rang.
Oh my gosh. You find the stupid, is there like a website, Stupid Criminal?
Yes, Stupid Criminal Stories. Look it up.
Well, Larry, you're going to like this one. And folks, you can go out to our website, which is www.thefinancialcafe.us. Vote on which story you think is best. And for the listeners of the show, the regular listeners, you will know that I like to make fun of Larry's age. And by the way, I actually had to drop him off today so he could limp into the studio.
Watch it.
So
it's because I was kicking you. Never mind.
Yeah. So he hurt his foot kicking me. But and Larry likes to make fun of the fact that let's just say I'm follically challenged.
What's the glare, John? You know, it's sitting over here. The glare is just, you know.
Uh-huh. So now we're getting a little mean. Anyway, in Japan, Japanese men hold competition to celebrate baldness.
I don't know what to say to that, John. I just don't know.
The kicker here, it's the fact that they're celebrating baldness. Hey, I might move. But I'm not going to participate in this competition. It is a tug of war, and they put suction cups on their head. And so it's kind of like a sumo wrestling, except instead of pushing each other out, they use the suction cups to pull in a tug of war the opponent out.
So who are we going to get for your opponent?
I just told you I don't plan on participating.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, it's actually a pretty serious event. So either there's not a whole lot going on in Japan, and they have a picture here. You got to love the picture.
Yeah, that just, no.
It's actually very comical.
That is.
When I think of the Japanese and techniques, I revert back more to my judo and jiu-jitsu than I do suction cups on a bald head.
Absolutely, yes. I did martial arts as well. But yeah, I'm not even going to try and pronounce this man, but his quote was, "My head still hurts."
My head still hurts. Okay, and with that, I think we're going to wrap up the show today. Thanks to WSIE FM 88.7, The Sound, for letting us
again
share some information.
Keep asking us to come back.
Some information with you on a variety of topics. Michelle, thanks for coming in. It's been fun.
You.
Great to see you again.
Yes. Thank you for having me. Nice to meet you.
We
will have you back. To share some more stories in the future. So I guess we'll wrap this one up. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.